and welcome to Tiny Voice Talks with me, Tori Bono. And Tiny Voice today is talking about anything's possible. Yeah, absolutely anything. You know those dreams, those hopes, those wishes you've had at sort of 3 o'clock in the morning, or at least those are the sort I get. Well, they're possible. And today I am joined by Brett Griffin, who is a living embodiment that anything's possible. So welcome, Brett.
Hi there, Tori. Are you okay?
Yeah, well, the voice is going, but other than that, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. It's been a lot, busy term. It's very difficult to get out of the routine, even though we're not teachers anymore. It's still feel like we're running term to term.
Absolutely. Well, for anyone that hasn't come across you yet, Brett, who is Brett Griffin?
Yeah, so I'm founder of Pupil Progress. That's a tracking and monitoring tool for schools. So I used to be a teacher for just short of 12 years. I was a PE teacher. I was a director of sport at the back end of that teaching career. So one of the assistant principals at a school in central London. And now I'm the founder of an ed tech. Well, we're no longer a startup, so we're more of an established business, but that's, I suppose, that frames me.
So how on earth, and this is the big question, how on earth do you go from being a PE teacher to the founder of an ed tech company?
I often ask myself that question almost every day. It's been a really interesting journey because it kind of happened in stages, and I later learned that it's a well-known process that you test a minimum viable product and you actually see if it's actually solves the problem that you think it does. I did all those things kind of organically. So I suppose the backdrop is we were in quite a high pressure context. We were an academy. We were actually one of the first academies in central London. And we were, as all schools are, under huge scrutiny with regard to your attainment outcomes. Ofsted, obviously, is high on priority lists of a lot of those schools, especially early, new schools. And we were funded by the City of London Corporation, so it was a school that really could not fail. And, the brutal honesty, I had a set of results one year that wasn't good enough. And what happened was, that it was made quite clear by the school that we need to improve these results. And we need to see a dramatic increase in what's actually happening with regard to your attainment, specifically GCSEs. So I created this system that enabled me to track and monitor and see exactly where the students are. So I knew exactly what we needed to do in order to move them forward and to achieve their minimum target grade. And I'll be more specific about that. Lots of systems were around where you could kind of get an idea that the students were working at, say, for example, a grade six or a grade, four. But this system, where it set itself apart was it pulled everything together across the exam board qualification, and it allowed you to see exactly how many marks students were away, how each unit was performing. As a result of which, I suppose, cutting a long story short, I had a very clear understanding of what the results would be way before the exam actually, the exam series outcomes. Wow. And they were, to the percentage, they were completely and utterly, so I predicted actually around about 82%, and it came in 83%. There was a lot of people that wanted to use this tracking system. And then, my assumption was, this is just revolutionized the way that I see what is happening across all of my cohort. So it gave me confidence. And these are things that it's not just data. It wasn't just data. It made me feel competent. It made me feel actually it brought back a lot of enjoyment in the job because I actually had an action plan and I had a clear way of executing that action plan. It made me feel good about my job. It made me feel like I was actually capable. Huge impact on my confidence because obviously I was under a little bit of scrutiny because the results weren't good enough. So there was lots of human improvement. I say human improvements. It sounds like a bit of a washy term. There was a huge impact on my psychology, not just my ability to meet my performance management.
What the listeners want to know, and me, probably me more than the listeners, where on earth does this idea come from? I mean, was it just you were lying in bed one night and went, oh, do you know what? I'm going to create this whole system. I mean, where did the idea come from?
Yeah, so I knew I needed something that did all of this calculation for me. So at the time, before we moved from, so at the time it was A star to C's, and then it moved obviously a long time ago to 9 to 1. So before when it was A star to C's, and this is why we was talking about 82%, because it was actually 82%, which students were going to get a C or above. And actually we needed to make sure that 70% of students all made minimum target grade. We actually had 73 made minimum target. Now, obviously the measures have changed. The methodology by which you had to actually calculate the grades that students were working at was so complex because you had UMS conversions. So I actually was able to create a system. It was one Christmas with my brother. My brother's an absolute whiz on Excel. And he actually was able, I could talk him through, well, actually I need the UMS conversions to calculate the grades. And then the actual UMS actual grade, UMS conversions then are applied to the grade boundaries to give me a grade. The moment it was created, and we were working on it for about, I don't know, maybe an hour and a half. It was just this. I've never experienced it ever again, or since that time. It was just wow. This, I don't think you understand how much easier my life is now as a result of this. I can literally see, and then I spent about 2 hours putting in all of the students' marks, and I was like wow, like I've got to do this with Rakib, I've got to do this with Adeola, I've got to do this. So I just, it was crystal clear, and it was weird, like it was over a Christmas period and I almost had excitement to get back at it. And it was over Christmas, so it wasn't necessarily like, oh my god, I just had this idea. It was in line with the process that we have to have followed as teachers. So then I started sharing it with other actual PE teachers. And then I was getting random phone calls saying, look, can you set me up with this system? And then that's what the idea really wasn't the actual tracking system. The idea was actually making it into a software so teachers could then set themselves up. So yeah. I was like, well, rather than me setting you up on an Excel spreadsheet, why don't I actually create this into a software that actually allows you to set yourself up, allows you to create an account, log in, because then you can just add your own classes. You can then select which sports you want to do. You can then add your own tests. And then I spoke to, I mean, and this is where I don't know why I did it, but I just did. Went and spoke to a software company and said, you know, can you make this software do this? And this software company said, yes. So I said, okay, well, how much will it cost? And they said, it will cost this much. And at the time, in my head, you know, now when I look back, basically I spent my life savings on paying for this software. So I'd saved, you know, X amount. Well, at the time it was like for the first version that wasn't particularly very complex, it was like about, I mean, it's not a huge amount of money, but it was enough. It was around about £8,000. So
that's not a small amount of money.
No. And especially when that was, so that got me that basically, but I can't explain it in my head. It was, there is absolutely like, I have to do this.
But you've already said that actually for you as a teacher, it had given you confidence. It had given you something that you hadn't had before. And actually, in a sense, it was creating that for the wider market, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think for me, I know now there is a part of me that has always wanted a wider impact. Mm. And the thought of me being able to replicate the way I felt for other teachers.
Yeah.
Having had really difficult conversations with head teachers, chair of governors, vice principal, real deep scrutiny conversations, to, you know, feeling quite incompetent, and then feeling, you know, I'd have, you know, sometimes I'd get a phone call before a line management meeting saying, Brett, has anything changed on your tracking system between the now and the, you know, the last time that we met? And I said, no, well, we don't need to meet then, because there's nothing we need to talk about. Let me know when there's more assessments we can discuss. So then it built trust that I was capable and competent. And then it allowed me to feel again more capable. And then when you feel that trust, respect, that you're actually able to deliver on what you're paid to deliver on, then you feel good about what you do. And I was, this is why I was like, well, if every teacher could feel like that, then that has to be something that we need to get out there. And there is, you know, to start with, there was a lot of people saying, well, it's a PE thing, so I don't understand how this. And because GCSE PE, it's an examined subject. The methodology works for every subject area. You know, MFL have got four different units. There's so many qualifications with very complex calculations. And I liken it to the bank balance scenario. When we were younger, everyone misspent because it was so difficult to find out what was your actual bank balance. So you'd get a statement, or you'd have to go to the cash point. And then obviously the application and online banker came along, and you can see exactly where your financial position is. Like, I can open my phone now, and in under half a second, I can see how much money I've got in my bank. And it allows me to go, well, I can't afford that. I can't order that takeaway. Whereas before, you were blind spending, right? You were like, oh, I'm sure I've got enough money in the bank. It's not a problem. And then the sweats come when you open up the statement that comes monthly, and you're like, wow, like I'm £378 overdrawn because I've been blind spending.
Yeah.
Same thing. Teachers, I was, you blind spend your lessons. I'm just going to go through these lessons, and I'm sure I'm teaching them what they need to know, and I'm sure they are where I need them to be. And then when you actually sit down and work out where they are, you're like, oh my God, they're so far away. What this system allowed you to see in real time today, they are here. And then when I do another assessment, everything's updated. So I've got a live picture, and I can see physically how my students are moving forward. I can literally watch it happening, rather than going, I'm sure what I'm covering is what they need. And then you have that panic moment. You're like, oh my God, like I've only got 12 lessons left. I've, you know, all the things that teachers will resonate completely. So if you've got something that is, you're able to, again, you know, it makes you feel like you're in control, which is a massive thing that, you know, our human psychology. One of the things that makes us, when people feel like they're in control, either in control of their, you know, their professional careers, their personal lives, when you feel in control, you generally feel good about yourself. And it allowed me to feel in control again.
What I'm wondering is how you go from being a PE teacher to, you said, you know, you've gone to the software company, you've said, can you create this piece of software for me? How do you use your teacher skill base to develop what you've developed? I mean, how on earth did you do that?
Well, it was an interesting process, because what actually happened was, again, we went through an organic process that is a known process, which is basically testing this MVP, which is your minimum viable product. I just did it organically. So I said, well, in my head, there is no way that people are going to look at this and not actually subscribe to this. Now, at the time, I thought to myself, well, it's just out there. People can subscribe to it. Schools were paying, I think it was roughly like about £200, £250 annually for this tracking system. And I remember I got my phone pinged on PayPal. I received my first subscription. It went live, and it was about
a day. Wow.
It it went live, and then someone had paid for it. They just saw it and just paid for it. I was like, oh my God. Like, so I suppose, so I was in teaching for about 2 years while track PE was just in the background. And then it started to gain traction. Now, then people started to say, well, I'd get a phone call randomly from like a vice principal. And what was happening was a PE teacher was going to parents' evening and then giving the reports to the students. And then the students and to the parents, and the parents were like, this is incredible. And then they'd go from the PE meeting and they'd be like, this is amazing. I know exactly where my child is. You quite clearly, you're teaching exactly what needs to be taught. And then they'd go to the English teacher or the French teacher, and then they would be holding their hand out to say, can I have one of the reports that the PE teacher's got, please?
Yeah.
And they're like, what is that? And then the other subject areas were taking it off of them and then saying, where did you get this? And then I was getting phone calls from geography teachers and vice principals just randomly saying, can we just buy this, please, for all subject areas?
Mm.
And then that's when I was like, oh, my God, like this is all my thoughts are beginning to become a realization. Why would you not want to use this for other subject areas? And then the thoughts became reality, because then I started getting phone calls saying, oh, look, is this track PE? Do you do, you know, track maths, track English, track history? I said, no, it's just a PE thing at the moment. And then I actually randomly, one of my closest friends, he's like my best friend. We've been best friends for pretty much our whole life. He actually played in the Premier League, incredibly talented person. And I remember going to watch him play. He used to play for Leicester. And we just talked it through one evening after a game. I can't remember who he played. At the time they were playing in the Championship, that was before they got in the Premier League. And we just talked it through for like 2 hours about, well, it's working, right? What are the barriers? Mm-hmm. What is it the worst case scenario? And we just talked it through really sensibly about, is this viable? Quitting teaching and starting something that gets out to, and then that's when the action plan started. So I basically gave myself from that point like 6 months to get the action plan sorted, to get all of my ducks in a row, which was at the time I had a flat in Brighton, so I rented that out, and then I worked out how much I could pay myself from the current subscriptions. I then moved back with my parents, and yeah, the day that I handed in my notice was a very scary day, because I'd made the decision and I was like, this is what's going to happen. And I remember walking into the office, and my vice principal at the time, he said, he couldn't get his head around it. He said, why would you've been part of this basketball academy you've created with an exceptional coach, a gentleman named Jackson Gibbons. We actually built an incredible basketball academy. You know, you're director of sport. And he actually said to me, you won't leave. He's like, Brett, you won't leave.
Mm.
I was like, no, I've handed in my notice. And he said, you won't leave. He just didn't believe it.
Yeah.
And then I left, and then we managed to get investment. I think one of the things I learned about myself, I actually read a quote randomly this morning about, it was from Denzel Washington, says about luck is actually being in a position to act on an opportunity, which is a fascinating way of looking at luck, because I've always said we've been very lucky. But I've always put myself in an opportunity to be able to act on something that is very fortunate. And I give an example. Train ride home. On the way back, I was currently still teaching, working through my notice. I was finishing in the summer term, marking books. A gentleman was talking to me. It was quite frustrating because I was trying to mark these papers, and he was just kept talking and talking. So I just said, oh, you know, I kind of surrendered to it and ended up talking to him. And he was talking about a business that he owns. And I said, well, it's interesting. I'm actually leaving teaching to start this business. Where the name Pupil Progress came from, I do not know, but I founded the company in 2014 under Pupil Progress and was traded under Track PE. Mm. And he was talking about an accelerator program that was completely free. right? And an accelerator program is when you've got a brand new idea or concept, and at whatever stage of the early journey of new business, you would be able to be accepted on this program to help get mentoring, coaching, methodologies to allow you, your business or your idea to come to fruition.
Wow.
I was like, this sounds incredible. Where is this? He said, oh, it's called the eSpark, Entrepreneurial Spark Program. It's funded by NatWest. And he says it's completely free. That I got off the train and followed him to the actual office. I went in there in my PE kit and they were like,
wow.
Who are you? I said, I just heard about this from this gentleman and I want to introduce myself. And they said, oh, okay, what do you do? So I said, I'm a PE teacher. I've handed in my notice. And they said, right, well, did you want to be part of the program? I said, well, of course, like this sounds amazing. I'm ridiculously blind handing my notice in, getting this software off the ground. And they said, well, we've got another round of applications that close in 4 days. I handed my application in the next day. Wow. And then I had to go and do a 1 minute pitch to these four mentors on the program. So you literally got in an elevator, went up to the top. They tried to create this, you know, kind of Dragon's Den environment. I was, you know, nervous as hell. Did my 1 minute pitch. And then we got on the accelerator program. And then, you know, it just a random series of events, because I was always wanted to talk and try to understand how to get this off the ground. You've gone from knowing everything you get to a stage in your teaching career where you feel confident about what you know. People can come in with new ideas, but there's not a huge amount of stuff that can be reinvented as a teacher. And you've gone from knowing and being competent to being just an absolute baby. Mm-hmm. And the learning from that was insane. Because people, I would like to think I'm quite, you know, got some character or I'm actually relatively interesting person. Everyone just thought I was this quiet, very timid, because I was in shock about how little I knew. Mm-hmm. So I just spent the whole time listening. Just listening all the time, because I'm like, I know zero. And I managed to meet, so I got invited, and this is a true story. We got invited. I'll go back one step. Lots of the businesses in that accelerator program were seeking investment to accelerate the business. So exactly like you'd see in Dragon's Den. Same questions: who are you, what's your value proposition, you know, how much money are you generating, all of the questions you'd see on Dragon's Den. It's a very similar process. Now, it's not quite like it exactly, but it gives you a really good idea. And I was like, well, so I started speaking to people that were raising money, and they were talking to me about how they're raising money. And a couple of people said, well, so, you know, when do you start charging and when do you start making money? Because that's, and I was like, well, we're already charging schools. They're already paying. And they looked at me like, hold on a minute. So you've already got a software that people are already paying for. I was like, yes. Like, wow. Like you. So then I met with, there was a software and a representative called, I think it was Angel Deck or Angel Den or something like that. I can't remember exactly. And he was like, yeah, you would be really viable for investment. So I then started to explore it, and I got invited to a pitch session where the businesses would then pitch to actual investors. So at the time, one of my mentors, Mandy, she asked me to come along and watch. She's like, you should be going for investment, Brett. You're generating revenue. You've got a great idea. The market is you're serving is a big market. So I went to that. I went to that that presentation session. I watched all the pitches. And then afterwards, there was this kind of area out the back where there was some food and some drinks, and people were just talking to the investors and following the presentations. So I went, she said, right, you need to go in that room and you need to go and network with everyone. You need to get as many business cards as possible. And this is the start of the process. So I said, no problem. So I went in there and I managed to talk to everyone except one guy. And this guy, and then I ended up randomly going to the toilet And then I ended up, at the time we were washing our hands, I said, oh, look, I'm so sorry. You're one of the investors and I didn't get a chance to speak to you. And he said, oh, you're at Pupil Progress. I've heard your 1 minute pitch, because we had to do these 1 minute pitches in competitions. Mm. He was like, can I talk to you more about my idea? And he said, yeah, absolutely. Let's get a meeting in place. So I said, okay, well, let's meet next week. And I walked him through the business on a white wall. I swear to God, it's like the white wall's about 10 feet tall and then maybe about, I don't know, 15 foot wide.
Mm.
I had a pen and I walked him through the whole plan. And I just thought, this is a great experience, because I'm talking to an angel investor and
get
asked great questions. He leant back on his chair and he just said, I'm in, let's do it.
No.
So I said, sorry, what? He said, I'm in. You know how much you need. You know, you've got an action plan. Like, I've got something I want to invest in now, but I'd actually rather invest in this. So let's go. And that was the first investor we spoke to.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing.
I freaked out, because there's loads of psychology involved with that, which is you've got this dream and idea, and as soon as you actually start working on whether that's going to become reality or not, you then get scared and don't want to find out. So it took me 2 weeks to say yes. So I'd speaking to everyone about it and they were saying, you're going to say yes, obviously. And I said, you know, I don't know. And then he was ringing me up saying, what are we going to do? Do you want to do this or not? Like, I think you've got an amazing idea. I think it's got huge potential. I really want to invest in something where it's impacting on education. It took me 2 weeks to say yes.
Yeah.
And he's been our sole investor for the last, 7 years. Been an incredible, I see him as part of the team. He's been an incredible mentor. Insanely intelligent, but also just a really good guy. And that's how we got started. And then we got investment, and then I was able to ring Barnaby, my co-founder. I'd been poking around whether Barnaby, because he was a science teacher and a director of science, I knew I didn't have the capabilities to actually translate what we had in place for PE. I needed someone as clever as Barnaby, who's Pupil Progress co-founder. And I rang Barnaby up and said, you remember when we met in that coffee shop and I was probing around whether this would work for other subject areas, and you sent me a version that you would do for science? I've now got investment and I want to bring you on board. And I want to bring you on board as one of the, as co-founder.
Mm.
And then that's when it all started. And then me and Barnaby were part of the accelerator program for like 2.5 years, and just started growing the subject areas one by one. Part of this framing of anything's possible is you start to work out very quickly, you have to learn what it is that you don't know. Yes. And then you can plug all of those gaps. Like Barnaby is one of the cleverest people I know. And bringing him on, I was just acutely aware I don't have that ability that he has. So I need him on board and I need to let him run with that. And he solved major problems. He solved the ability to get it across loads of subject areas really quickly. Like we thought it was going to take us like 4 or 5 years, and he ended up actually, I call it poking around, but he kind of ended up poking around the code, having done some learning himself, poking around the system that his software created, and then rang me up one day saying, I think I've solved how we can do this faster. And I said, amazing. I'll go back one step. He rang me and said, Brett, we've got a real problem. It's going to take us like almost a week per tracker, and there's like thousands of trackers. And I said, one thing I'm absolutely confident in, Barney, and you have to trust me when I say this, you will solve the problem. and then we laughed, and then he rang me like 3 days later with the solution. He solved the problem. He said, well, I've actually had to poke around and I can actually create trackers under an hour. So I said, well,
wow.
Have you done it for this school in Spain? He said, yeah, I've already done that one and that one and that one and that one. And it was like, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And these all, there's been so much learning about yourself through this journey. Again, framing this whole idea of anything's possible is there's so many people with the ability to do whatever they want to do, but there is some idea in their mind that has just blocked them from saying, well, I can just start the process and start doing.
What I find really interesting listening to you, Brett, is you have a very strong growth mindset mentality. You know what you want to achieve, but you go out of your way in figuring out what it is you don't know, and then you look at how you can solve that problem. You recognize that in order to get to Z, you have to go through the alphabet, but you may need support in doing that and you need to grow. But it's fascinating listening to you because your passion is so strong and that desire to actually reach the end goal is so strong, but you recognize that you'll need support, guidance and help along the way.
Yeah, I think this process is almost it's very humbling. And when I think about the team at Pupil Progress, I genuinely say this. I'm not just saying this to get a reaction. I genuinely find it quite embarrassing that, you know, I don't really like the title CEO. I really enjoy the title founder because I had the idea to get it into as a software, which meant that software allows you to continue to make the product better. It can evolve. It can continue to serve people's needs. And I look at the team and the skill set that our whole entire team have is incredible. Mm. You know, we've got such talent in the team, and I find it kind of a little bit humbling. And you know, the fact that, you know, however, to my credit, it's very clear where my gaps are. Yes. So it's very clear where my actual areas of weakness are. And I find myself, when I talk to other people, it's amazing when you start talking to them, the percentage of people that go into a space of, I need to show this person that I'm clever. And they don't get into a space of, I wonder what I can learn from this person.
Yes.
And I, fortunately, the shock of how little I knew very early got me into a space of, right, this conversation with this person, I may never speak to them ever again. And they have insanely valuable information. So I need to stop talking to show that I'm as clever as this person. And I need to absorb as much information as possible because the clock is ticking. And it is incredible how many people that I will speak to that are not interested in actually going, well, what is it that I could learn from you? Because I've got all of these gaps in my what I'm trying to do, and you might have some answers for me.
So I've got a bizarre question for you. Does success come from recognizing what you don't know and plugging those gaps?
I think 100%. My opinion, and this is, you know, it's not gospel. I can't sit here and say, I don't know anyone who's been on any journey that can do everything. Mm. And I have a very simple rule. If someone tells me that they've got everything sorted and they know everything about the business and they've got every eventuality mapped out and also protected against, there's just so little trust I'd have in that person, because it is absolutely, there is no way you can know everything. We've just put on a marketing director, incredibly talented marketing director. She has been in marketing for 20 years. You know, been asked to speak at, you know, Google headquarters, representing Google partnership for the company that she used to work for. How am I supposed to know what she knows? It's not possible.
Yeah.
So you've in my mind, you're whatever your success looks like. If you start to work out where those gaps are and how you can plug those gaps with either other people, you know, loads of businesses that have got someone who's a coder, but then are not necessarily able to be the CEO. So they bring in a CEO. Or, you know, even if I think about, you know, my teaching profession, it was very clear which teachers in my department were better at certain things. So you're kind of like, well, if they're really good at that, why don't they just lead on it? Because then everyone's winning. I'm able to, you know, meet what I'm delivering on my job. I've got to make sure, obviously, that they get the credit for doing it because they've done it. But we all look amazing as a team because I'm tapping into that skill set, and they're able to deliver on it, and they're getting the credit they deserve because they've got the skill set. But the team look amazing because we're able to deliver on what it sounds coarse as a teacher, but what we're paid to do.
But I think what you're saying is, well, what you're talking about is a leadership style that not everyone can actually harness, because all too often leaders become leaders because, I'm not sure how this will come across, listeners, forgive me for how this comes across, but leaders sometimes become leaders because they are seen as the best or want to be the best in a certain area. And what you're saying is great leadership comes from working as a team and actually recognizing the strengths of each individual in the team and really harnessing those.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I mean, there's almost an element of leadership in, you know, it's something I've always been very passionate about. And this is not kind of a, I did an MA in leadership. It was something I was very passionate about. I wanted to become a school head teacher or principal. So I did my MA, actually, ironically, a very short few months before I actually ended up quitting teaching, I completed my MA.
Oh, wow.
And there's almost an element, you know, for me, the best leaders that I've ever come across are the ones that are almost coordinators.
Mm.
So they're not at the front going, you know, I'm the leader. I need to, you know, you need to follow this as a process. You need to do exactly what I say. We've all done, you know, we've all done the workshops on the difference between leadership and management. But this is a different conversation. This is actually going, well, where do we want to be as an organization? What do we want? Where's our top line? We want to be impacting this amount of teachers. We want to be impacting this amount of schools. We want to be impacting this amount of students. So how do we as a team, with all of the skill sets that we have, how do we go and execute that? And that's, in my mind, is how clear it is giving people the freedom to deliver and execute on their skill set and allowing them to contribute what their expertise is. And where it becomes aligned is, well, as long as what we're actually contributing is contributing to us meeting our main goal, our main objective, then everyone's winning, because you've got people that don't feel like they're being, you know, I've recently done a very short talk on micromanagement at one of the Teach Me Icons events. And, you know, no one wants to feel like they're not in control of their own day. So your job, in my mind, as a one of the, you know, business leaders, is to actually coordinate and to actually allow people the freedom to contribute to that end goal and all the things that come with it, you know, celebrating when those things have gone well. I'm a massive believer in failing your way to success. And I know it's such a overused word, but what you learn when things don't go well is incredible. It's unbelievable. Yeah. If it hasn't gone well, why? And then what do we need to do next time so it doesn't happen again? And as a result of which, actually, because that thing didn't go well, we now are doing it better 2 months later. So we've actually grown as a result of that thing that went wrong that we all thought was a disaster. I no longer see anything as a disaster anymore. Nothing. I'm just like, the amount we're going to learn from this scenario means that we will move forward faster in the next 2 weeks. Fact.
Wow. That takes real courage.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know about the word courage. I think it's more, I think for me, it's more actually having seen so many times where you think it is catastrophic and then you end up, and then as long as you go at it with a problem solving mindset, as long as you then come back to it and actually go, okay, well, what did happen? How do we then correct our processes? How do we enhance what we do so it doesn't happen again, or so that we actually get a better result out of it? When you physically see the impact of that mindset, then it doesn't become courage. It just becomes common sense. Rather than sitting around going, right, well, who was to blame for that? And right, well, you know, I need to have a meeting with you to discuss why on earth you weren't doing your job properly. You know, people are human beings. There's no human being that is not going to make a mistake. It's not possible. So as long as we understand that as a fundamental behavior of humans, then we're going to grow and we're going to learn from it. And I've made countless mistakes. I've sat there and said that, listen, this is on me. This has happened. And other people in the team have made mistakes, but you know, we don't see them as mistakes. We see them as growth opportunities, which sounds very twee and very, you know, cheesy, but we had a scenario, you know, I'll be very open and honest. We had a scenario we didn't see coming because of the amount of users we now have on the platform. We had a day where the platform wasn't accessible, right? Just one day. And it's never happened again. And I remember sitting there and you know, there was a little bit of anxiety in the team because obviously lots of chat, you know, responses were coming through. I can't get my data. Has my data been lost? We're talking to customers. So there's absolutely no way any data can be lost ever because of the, you know, the things and the systems we put in place to make sure that that's not a possibility. So we had a day that was quite anxious because users couldn't access, and the learning from it, you know, I said to the team at the end of the day, I said, the amount we're going to learn from this experience is when we get past, you know, we have 1,000 teachers logging on per day. When we get past that and we've got 5, 6, 7, 8, 10,000 teachers logging on a day, what we've learned as a result of this experience will mean that 10,000 teachers can log on in a day. It's what is happening now is going to allow us to be able to do that. And it was just clear. It's just clear. It's so clear in my head that these experiences, unless we go through them, and this is why, you know, everyone talks about failing your way to, unless you go through that, you're not able to get to a position where 10,000, 20,000 teachers log on in a day because you haven't learned from it.
Have you always had that mindset, do you think?
I think I've had a mindset. My parents were always very supportive of, you know, I said to my dad, I'm thinking about doing this. And a lot of people had said to me, why would you do that? You know, you've got other people in the market. You've got, you know, people use Sizzra, Formatrix, people using Go for Schools now, you know, people use Sims. Simply, people use spreadsheets. In my head, it was so clear. It's like, no one understands what I can see in my head. And I remember speaking to my dad, and I thought my dad would turn around to me and say, yeah, I'm not sure, Brett, you know, you've got a good career as a teacher. He just said, look, what have you got to lose? What have you got to lose?
Yeah.
What, like, let's just say it doesn't work. Okay. So you know, you're an experienced teacher, you've got your MA in leadership. And he basically just said, go at it. So I think there's an element of maybe the way we were raised that you can kind of, you know, there is no limit. And I kind of felt that in a way, you know, very long, I try and keep it relatively short, but we'd set up a basketball academy and this mindset, maybe it was earlier actually talking through it now. It's funny. It's almost like a counseling session. But, it, you know, when I took the job at the school, I wanted to create, it was in my head, it was the number one sports college in the country that people would come to. And they were a sports college at the time. It was a City London Academy. And I'd been trying to get a football academy off the ground. And it was quite difficult because I hadn't found that coach that was going to make the difference. Mm. And then a guy called Jackson Gibbons came to me and presented this idea of a basketball academy to me, as director of sport. And I was like, this guy, I'm hooked. He was talking about changing people's lives, setting up an elite sports academy that meant students were able to be successful both academically and in their playing careers. So I'm all in. You deliver on that. You be this coach because I know that you are able to be that. And I'll get all of this up and running from a school processes point of view. So I went around presenting to governors. And I remember just saying to Jackson, it was so coarse. There was no real, I said, look, Jackson, you just, all I need from you is getting kids in training, playing games, and then behaving in class. I'm leaving that with you because you know how to do that. Mm-hmm. I know how to get this. It was almost like a business plan. I know how to get this into the school. And I went presented to school leaders. I mean, it's frightening how something so incredible. It's now number one basketball academy in the country. Jackson sent to America on full scholarships, close to like 150 students, like kids from Bermondsey. There's one girl, Toyosi Abiola. I don't know if she's managed to do it, but she's very close to playing in the women's NBA.
Wow.
And this is the thing is, you know, and the PE team at the City London Academy, incredible people. One of my proudest moments is the fact that they are actually now more successful after I left. So that's actually one of my proudest moments is the fact that that it continued to go from success to success because what was in place was a culture, not just a flash in the pan. And they've now got funding to make another open up the playground to be a basketball court. I think they've got plans on it being like the sport hub for Sport England basketball. But I suppose, you know, the whole process of allowing people to deliver on what it is they're supposed to be delivering on and just allowing them to just be the expert, it creates an environment that as long as people are clear on where we're getting to, then I don't know if I'm making sense. It makes it quite a simple process.
No, you are making complete sense. You really are. And I'm just listening to you. And what you're saying makes complete sense. It's getting that mindset that you've got, which I think stops that anything possible from potentially happening to other people. So what would you say to those people out there, to the listeners that have got these phenomenal ideas, of which there are probably many, many, but are sitting there thinking, oh, I don't know that I can do it. What would your guidance be?
I think there's, you know, what I don't want to do is waffle on about there, you know, go and do anything you want. When I look back at the process I followed, it was very pragmatic and it was very realistic. So what I mean by that is if someone has got this, what does it look like? So if, for example, someone had aspirations of going into a different career or, you know, wanted more from their teaching career. So let's not talk about just teachers leaving the profession. What if they wanted more from their teaching career?
Yeah.
What does that process look like? And you can literally map it out. Now, if I look back, that whole process, you know, one of the things I kind of deviated from was there was a lot of times where people would turn around and say, that's not possible, right? Mm. One of the reasons why I left to start Pupil Progress is the recognition that actually I wasn't the blocker that other people were.
Yeah.
So I wanted to, you know, after the basketball academy, I wanted to set up a football academy, dance academy. I wanted it to be a complete sports hub, knowing the impact that the basketball academy had had on those students' performance. We used to have the core message was you're a role model. Because you are listened to and influence students far greater than any teacher can. as a role model student, you influence the student body far more deeply than any of the staff can. So one of the problems I've personally felt was other people were my blocker. I want to do these things. No. You know, not another idea. And actually, one of the reasons why I left to start Pupil Progress is my thought process was, what happens if I take the ceiling off? What happens if I just remove the roof? How high can this go? And the roof was actually not me. The reason why I'm talking about this is, are you in a scenario where actually other people are telling you it's not possible? So it's actually looking at and taking a step back and going, are people above you? Are people in your sphere? Are people in your network telling you what's not possible? Because, you know, I absolutely fundamentally believe if you surround yourself with people that have that mindset, you are going to be influenced, whether it's the positive mindset of anything's possible or whether it's the negative mindset of you're not capable of that. So I suppose the first thing for me is, who do you surround yourself with?
Yes.
Do you surround yourself with people that I don't surround myself with anyone that is either derogatory towards me, negative around me or to me. I just don't. It's not like I don't tolerate it. I don't want to be around those people. I want people that are going to be uplifting, and I want people around me who are going to say that it is possible. And you are, you know, you are a brilliant person. And I want to talk to the people around me to say you are a brilliant person. And the more you surround yourself with people that are of that mindset, the more you end up behaving like that. And so I suppose my first point is actually who are you surrounding yourself with, and who do you have conversations with regularly? And if those people that you have conversations regularly are talking about how bad this is and how that doesn't work, and you will end up with that mindset. The second thing is, if you genuinely want to make a change, what is the process? So for me, it wasn't just a case of like, oh, I dream one day of this. It was, well, okay, first off, you've got to see if it works, which is when I put that money down to start the software, first version. Can I afford to do it? Can I live with my parents? And then when I started to go through the plan became real, because it was a plan. It wasn't just a pipe dream. It was an actual actionable plan. So you might want to seek a career in something else. What does the plan look like? Start to write it down. Take yourself through it. How much money can I earn? A lot of people just go, well, I can't do that because, you know, I need to earn X amount of money. Well, do you though? Have you gone to your finances and seen what you can and can't buy, what you can cut out if you want that thing so badly? There was one point when I started Pupil Progress. It's one of the happiest times of my life. I had £47 a week to spend.
Wow.
When I first started Pupil Progress. And I've never felt more alive in my whole entire life, because I'd found a way of actually executing on what is the possible, you know, let's just say dream scenario. So you can actually physically plan, you know, what does it look like? Is it possible to take a, you know, I'm not suggesting you get yourself in debt, but what is it you can physically do that allows you to execute on a plan that, going back two steps, might catapult you forward 20?
Yeah.
And the other one is actually, well, Stephen Bartlett talks about it a lot, which is the biggest risk you'll ever take is not taking risks.
Mm.
And actually thinking to yourself, okay, the right now is this. And I tell myself, it's not possible for me to do X because of all these reasons. Well, what does 10 years time look like? What does 20 years time look like? So I did these thoughts, and what does it look like? What does my life look like in 30 years? If I don't change anything that I'm doing now, what does it look like in 20 years, 10 years, 30 years? Actually, I don't think that's where I want to be. So if it means I've got to go left or sideways or backwards for 2 years, I'd rather do that for 2 years than end up there in 30.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not a lot of people do it. Actually think about it pragmatically. and think about it in a way that's actually actionable rather than just it's not possible. I don't know if that's making any sense.
Oh, completely. Basically, who are you surrounding yourself with? What is the process that you are going to take to make that change? And don't be afraid of taking risk. That's absolutely vital. So much sense, so much sense.
Yeah, and I think as well is when I think about pupil progress, because of the work I did on the plan and it, in my head, it became less and less risky.
Mm.
Rather than just being this like, oh my God, you know, I'm just going to go and put a load of money down on this horse. And, you know, that's a great risk. It was actually, the more you discussed it, the more I thought about it, the more I planned it, the more I took action on the plan, the less riskier it became.
Yeah, it's planning. As you say, it comes back to that planning the process, actually looking at the plan. Now, I could talk to you all day, Brett. I really could, but I am conscious that the listeners only have a finite window. So I'm going to move to our last question, which is this. If you could have been taught by anyone, living or dead, who would have been your perfect teacher?
For me, it's easy. And it's probably a very common, well, I don't know if it's a common answer on this podcast, but Simon Sinek.
Mm.
You know, I know he's well listened to. You know, we had a very brief conversation about him, you know, pre this recording.
Mm.
I think he's fascinating to listen to because of how sensible what he's saying is.
Yeah.
So it's almost so profound because of the obviousness of it.
Mm.
And when you actually really listen to what he's saying and the way in which he's saying it, I couldn't think of someone I'd be more engrossed in. One of the guys that I actually was really privileged to be taught by was Dr. Max Coates when I was doing my MA. And I actually found out I was quite dyslexic while I was doing my MA, ironically, and dyspraxic really randomly. And I just could listen to Max all day. Just the way he's talked about, and I feel like, obviously I've never been fortunate enough to meet Simon Sinek, but the way he talks and the way in which he actually delivers it in the order, it just sticks. You just listen to it and say, wow, that's just so clear, so obvious, so actionable, and also something you can quite clearly see is going to have an impact. So yeah, I Simon Sinek, yeah, if I could be taught by anyone.
Love that. And actually, I'm sure many of the listeners are thinking, actually, do you know what Brett said today has been clear, it has been obvious, it is actionable, and I can see how it's going to have impact. And I'm just hoping, listeners, that you go away from this episode thinking, do you know what? Anything is possible. As the great Audrey Hepburn said, anything's possible. The word itself says, I'm possible. So, Brett, thank you so much for coming on and really inspiring us to basically have courage and take action. Anything's possible.
Thanks for your time, Tori. I've loved it. It's been great.